CBS Monday.
NCIS!
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday, starting at 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!
Welcome in to the Aughts and Audibles podcast, Friday edition. Matt Prehm, Eric Sculpa, Jared Mack. Happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the football that's around and also maybe some basketball mixed in as well. We're all in different parts of the state of Oregon because of the holidays, because of work. And yet we will all convene into a under construction Research Stadium Saturday afternoon. Oregon versus Oregon State. This is the, 126th game between these two programs. Ducks have won 8 of the last 10, and yet this is one of the rare occurrences that both teams are good. 17 combined wins, I think, are the most in the last 10 years. Both teams are ranked inside the top 25 college football playoffs. And for the first time in a long time, guys, it feels like maybe injuries factor here into this a little bit on Oregon's side, but it feels like both teams have a legitimate say in, hey, we could win this football game.
Absolutely. And both teams, if both teams could have gripes with injuries too. We had Carter Baines on the show a couple of days ago, and it's not like Oregon's the only team dealing with injuries. They've been dealt kind of a tough hand as well. What do you say, 10 players went down during the Cal week? Or the game itself, like they've hit kind of a rough patch too. So, it's kind of fun having, you know, we talked about the Washington Oregon rivalry and how, you know, we might be reaching kind of a sweet spot in that rivalry, and I think maybe we're hopefully getting the same thing in the Oregon Oregon State rivalry. And Jackson Nagel, our intern, wrote a really nice story, kind of outlining what Ryan Walk had to say, someone who grew up in the area. Obviously very familiar with the rivalry and kind of, are we getting back to where this rivalry was in the late 2000s, early 2010s, where both teams were ranked for three out of four consecutive games from like 2008 to 2012. Both teams being very competitive at that point, the game ultimately deciding a couple of Rose Bowl participants. Obviously we're not to the Rose Bowl participant part, but we're, I think, at a spot where it feels like both programs should be on the up and up trajectory. Most years. I mean, certainly Oregon feels like they're here to stay. And I know we talked with Carter a couple of days ago about kind of the long-term under Jonathan Smith of now the next test after this season, which is a very veteran team, will be what is the next group able to do? Because they're going to lose a lot of these key seniors that are on the roster. But no, I think this should be a really fun and competitive game. And we'll get to game predictions at the end. I've gone back and forth all week with exactly how I think it's going to go and who's going to win. I just think this is potentially going to be a really fun football game, which if you look at the history of it, typically these games are one of two things, blowouts or really close Oregon mm-hmm. State wins. Oregon isn't usually the team that wins the really close games if you look back at about the last 15 or so years.
Yeah, I always thought that was interesting that Oregon isn't the team that wins close. And maybe that's just because the past couple of years because of game management or whatever that might be, but Oregon State has been frisky the last couple of years. They're very frisky this year. They're a top 25 team. If they win again tomorrow, they'll hit 9 wins for the first time since 2012, which is a huge feat for this program, especially considering where they have been and how Jonathan Smith has basically picked them up. I don't know, might sound mean, but Jonathan Smith has kind of picked them up out of the gutter and turned them into a reputable Pac-12 program. And the credit goes a lot to him and just the things that he's been able to do there, hire the right guys, come back to his alma mater and, secure an offense. Even though they've struggled with quarterback issues this season, they're still, the term I used earlier, a frisky offense. They still are capable of putting up over 30 points. They're still capable of grounding and pounding you. They've developed their offensive line really well in the last couple of seasons. This is, I think, a closer game than a lot of people would expect it to be. Like Matt said, it's going to go through the refurbished or currently being built Research Stadium. I think that might, that'll add some element to it. It's not going to be the full capacity as it has been in years past. It'll be, was it 28,000? I think you guys mentioned before the show. That's just going to make it closer. That's going to be more of a Washington State feel, which I think is in the 30s of thousands of people that can go to that stadium. I think it's going to be a fun one. And I think one of the things I'm most excited for is to see what the hell the press box situation looks like, because that'll have a lot of impact on how we watch the game and all that. But it should still be a fun game. These games are always better when they're close. I know both sides, both fan bases would like it if their team won 50-0 every single time. But when it's a close game, this rivalry becomes better. It grows more hatred, more, you know, stems from the tree fall off and break to kids and all that. And so I'm hoping it's a close one. I think it'll be closer than people expect.
There's a lot on the line too. Oregon, mm-hmm. obviously they need to win this game to get to the Pac-12 championship game. And yeah, there's scenarios out there that Oregon could lose, but those get so wonky when you factor in a loss for Oregon and what you would need to happen. It would require like two or three different outcomes, one of which would be like a unexpected loss. And so it's you basically need to win this game to get to the conference championship. And I don't know how I would feel about this season where, let's say they get to ten wins by winning their bowl game, but they're 10-3. I don't know how I would feel if they went 10-3 and yet they lost to Washington and they lost to Oregon State. It'd be a weird vibe. So you can't lose to your rivals twice in one season. You would make expectations if you get to that conference championship game. And they're going to have to do it with some players still dinged up. Look, we expect Bo Nix to play. We expect Ryan Walk to play. We expect Alex Forsyth to play. But all three of these guys are dealing with injuries. And I think now the question becomes, it morphs from are they playing to how much does it impact what Oregon wants to do offensively? Because I think if we had a healthy Bo Nix going into this game, I think Oregon's offense could put up a lot of points. Without the running threat, though, I really wonder, is the number in this game going to be 24 points and you feel good about winning? Is it going to be lower than that? Or is this offense at Oregon going to have to score 30 to ensure that they win this game? I don't know what that answer is.
Well, I think that's the thing that makes it kind of interesting. One of the things is Oregon has been able to win pretty so much this season, scoring in the 40s. The defense, you just kind of say, okay, you guys can hold them in the 30s or the 20s. We're going to be good. The offense is going to carry us. And now you're in a spot where I'm not very confident they can win pretty. And they had to win really ugly last week against Utah. And to me, that's kind of the roadmap to winning this week too, in part because I see quite a few similarities between Oregon State and Utah in terms of just how they play offensively, what their strengths are defensively, the way their teams are kind of composed across the board. We'll get into some of those later. I don't look at this as a game where I go, oh, you should expect Oregon to score, hit the 40-point mark like they have been for most of the season. I would be, frankly, probably pretty surprised if that takes place, and would imagine that would be the result of Oregon State making a lot of mistakes or Oregon hitting some really big plays. Like, it's going to be either they hit some, you know, deep shots over the top that are unexpected or have a couple of turnovers that result in points, those sorts of things. And if you look at the turnover margin, Oregon State typically is the team that creates the turnovers and is the beneficiary of that. So, yeah, I'm in agreement, Matt. Like, I'm fully expecting this game to be played in the 20s, maybe into the low 30s. I think anything more than that means one of the teams has had some pretty good fortune, like, and I kind of laid out what that would mean a second ago. Really quick, what's the over-under, Jared? Matt, do you guys have that information?
Let me look.
I have it on a tab. Okay. Had to mute myself. The over is 59, and Oregon is a 3-point favorite.
59 means it's dropped. I think it opened at 61.5.
59 feels like kind of right where we're talking, and a little bit more scoring than what we're talking about, but like something where you're, you know, the winning team is scoring low 30s, which again, that feels appropriate here. And certainly the complexion has shifted. So no, I'm with you, Matt. Like, I think we all expect, I think Oregon's going to have available most of its key players for this game based upon what we've heard. Bo doesn't talk on Tuesday. Brian doesn't talk on Tuesday. Ryan doesn't suggest Alex is getting closer on Tuesday. If those things aren't happening, I think Forsythe is the one you have the least confidence because he hasn't spoken publicly and he didn't play last week. But I think everyone's probably going to be out there, but it's a matter of, yeah, what can you get from them? And that's where things really shift offensively for me is Oregon able to, now with the week of fully kind of understanding what you have with Bo Nix? Because remember last week, that was unclear. They were game planning for two different situations with, okay, you got Ty Thompson, you've got Bo Nix. Are they able to manufacture enough things in the run game, assuming Bo is unable to really be himself as a runner, which I'm going in with the assumption that's still the case. I don't think a full week heals all of that. Maybe it allows him to, maybe you don't do any design runs, but he's able to scramble more out of the pocket and feel more comfortable taking off, or at least, you know, move around a little bit more in there and be a little bit more mobile. But I don't think you're going to get 100% Bo Nix. I think that would be fool's gold or kind of foolish to expect. So what can this run game be? Oregon State is good against the run, and they're excellent against the pass. This is one of the best pass defense Oregon has faced all season, which is where you go. Oregon can't run the ball. How much success can they have throwing it? A lot of potential NFL-caliber guys back there, all-conference-caliber guys. I think they've had, what, 12, nine, I think they've given up 9 touchdowns through the air all season and 12 interceptions, which is a really impressive rate this far into a year. So, you know, a week ago against Utah, Oregon was able to move the ball primarily through the air in the second half, and obviously in the first half had a little bit of run success. Well, does it have to be that one-dimensional against a pass defense in Oregon State that is really capable in that area? If that's the case, that should make you a little bit nervous. So, no, I think the offensive stuff for Oregon, again, it's been all season, it's such a sure thing of like, oh, they're going to figure it out, they'll get 40 points. This week you're kind of going like, well, how are they going to attack an Oregon State defense that you have to have a lot of respect for?
Yeah, I mean, this is why Kenny Dillingham will eventually be paid all the big bucks, because he dialed up a game plan last week with a very hobbled Bo Nix, and they were still able to win the football game. I understand that it wasn't a pretty win, but it worked. And that's, I know that they only scored, you know, 10 points just a handful of points in the second half with their offense only being able to throw the ball. But that was a Utah team that, you know, all the things that they do well on defense is what Oregon State does well. And all the yards that Oregon put up against Utah, even though it wasn't that many, it dropped Utah from first in the Pac-12 to second in the Pac-12, and Oregon State, after their stellar showing against Arizona State last week, jumped into first place. You know, these are back-to-back weeks against two of the better defenses in the Pac-12. But again, what Oregon State does is very similar to what Utah does well, like Eric mentioned earlier, especially on defense. Offense, I think we'll get to in a little bit, but defensively, they're going to be physical. They're going to try and stuff Oregon's run game, which has been such a revelation for the Ducks this season. And as you know, they, with their two running back sets in Whittington and Irving, Oregon State's going to try to stop them. And Utah did so last week as soon as they realized, like, hey, that Bo Nix, he can't run the ball. We're just going to stop the running back. So that's exactly what they did. And that's what I expect Oregon State to try to do early. Because if Utah had done that earlier in the game, we might be talking about a lot of different things this week. But again, this is why you pay Kenny Dillingham the big bucks if you're a school looking for a really young and up-and-coming head coach, is to see what he does with an injured Bo Nix and an injured offensive line, to see what he comes up with, to how to move the football. I've got a lot of confidence in that sense, in how I think Kenny is – really just a brilliant guy offensively, and is going to come up with some stuff for Oregon to do and to get easy yards, to get easy plays. Is it going to work 100% of the time? Probably not, but it's probably going to result in Nix throwing the ball more often than I think we all think he will, like he did last week. But he still put up 287 yards to the air against the secondary that was the best in the Pac-12, and against a secondary that's got a bunch of NFL guys on it. I think it's going to be a similar game plan to what it was last week. But again, I'm still interested to see all the new wrinkles that Kenny has developed over the last week. Now knowing that Knicks is likely, is more than probable going to play, especially since we talked to him this week.
There's also the Kenny Dillingham to Arizona State rumors that are flying around right now. Just
right.
Does that have any kind of impact on this game? We have seen covering this program the last couple of years, coaching rumors have a direct correlation to a play on the field a couple times. Does that factor into this game at all? I don't know. Do we want to shift over to keys to the game?
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm good too.
I think for me, it's all the defense for me. If Oregon's defense comes to play, I've got pretty good confidence that Oregon can win this game with its offense being limited and what it can do. And so for me, Oregon needs to win and win consistently and win big on first and second down. You cannot allow this Oregon State team to get into third and short, because it's very much like last week against Utah. I mean, Cam Rising is a very good quarterback. What he did in throwing those three interceptions was very unusual for Cam Rising. But that is a team that's uncomfortable having to push the ball down the football field through the air multiple times, a ton of times in that game. And that's what they had to do. And so it's very similar for me. Win on first and second downs that you set up third and nine, third and 10, because Ben Gulbranson is not Cam Rising. And he's played well the last couple of weeks. He's thrown for three touchdowns, no interceptions the last two games. But this OSU passing attack is, I feel like, a shell of what Utah's is. And Utah's is not anything special because of their injuries right now. And Luke Musgrave is probably not playing in this game for Oregon State, their star tight end. He hasn't played basically since week two of the season. Their receivers are decent. But make Oregon State throw on third and long. And if you can accomplish that consistently, the averages say that OSU will convert quite a bit because Oregon's pass defense isn't very good. But I just feel like if you put them in the third and long situations, ultimately they're going to make some mistakes. Interceptions will get thrown. Balls will get tipped. Balls will hit the floor. And you'll walk off the football field making the stops needed to give your offense the separation.
Yeah, what did I say earlier? I said Oregon needs to win ugly. And the defense has to be a part of that, right? I mean, you don't win ugly with the defense giving up a bunch of points, giving up a bunch of yards, and instead of bending, not breaking, they break. And for me, I don't know if it gets overlooked, but I don't know if we've talked about it quite as much as maybe we need to. The defense had struggled to force a lot of turnovers this season. They forced three, and they all came in big spots. I think that's pivotal this week again against Gulbranson, who – he's not Cameron Rising. He doesn't throw the ball very much. Like, Oregon State is an offense that is a very low volume pass offense. Like, they throw, I think, about 25 passes per game this season, and that number is even less with him at the quarterback. When Chance Nolan was available the first four games or so, they were throwing it a little bit more frequently. So, like, if you can find ways to make it difficult on Gulbranson, and kind of maybe goes along with what Matt was saying, where it feels like the game's kind of in his shoulders, and that means you take away the run game and you can force some turnovers. I just think that's pivotal because we know this defense over the course of the season. Maybe we'll be surprised and it won't play out this way, but we know what takes place usually with this defense is they give up a lot of yards. They get into the red zone. They play pretty sound in the red zone defensively. They do a decent job of forcing field goals and at least forcing tough situations where they have to go for it on fourth. But teams move the football, and a big part of playing ugly and making this a game where it's, the offense doesn't have to strain too much is going to be like, can you force some turnovers and provide some positive situations where the offense maybe doesn't have to go the length of the field, or situations where you're able to build an early lead, and it plays into some more of what Matt is saying of like Oregon State's not a team that is built to play from behind. They want to play with the lead. So I think for me it's key to find ways to force turnovers. Gulbranson's actually done a pretty good job of protecting the football the last since the Utah game, he came in as a reserve, like as a starter, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's pretty impressive. But he's also a first-year quarterback, hasn't been in a spot or very many spots like this. Like if you look at the games that they've played during his success, Washington is the only game he's played against a team with a winning record. All the other games are against some of the bottom feeders. And as we've established this season, there's a huge difference between like the top six in the conference and the bottom six. And Gulbranson's played one game against a team in the top six, and that was Washington. They lost. It was in terrible weather conditions. I don't even think he threw for like 60 yards in that game. So like, I think it's pivotal that you make his life difficult and you try to force some mistakes there. Again, I think defensive stuff is going to be pretty key here.
Yeah, I like the top six or the bottom, or the, excuse me, the top half of the Pac-12 reference you got there, Eric, because against the top half of the Pac-12, you know, Oregon State has 8 or 9 total turnovers, 4 against Southern California, 4 against Utah, and then 1 against Washington. I know that Gulbranson wasn't playing in that USC game, I don't think off the top of my head, but you know, that's what happens against the better teams in the Pac-12, it seems like. And you go on the defensive side and you're like, oh, well, how many they've created 17 total turnovers this season. 8 of them came against the combination of Boise State in the very first game of the season and Montana State, as we all know, the powerhouse Montana State, even though they are pretty darn good. And the other and 4 other came against Colorado, probably one of the worst teams in college football up there with the University of Massachusetts. So that's, and, you know, we can all do some math here. That's 12 of their 17 turnovers come in 3 games against real bottom feeder level competition. It's a defense that plays really well, but it's very similar to Utah. And I think Oregon is going to expose them through the passing game more than anything else. You know, even against, as Eric mentioned, that Washington game against Oregon State, where there was unbelievable wind, you know, Michael Penix still threw for 300 yards in that game, or 298. So right there, this is a team that you can move the ball on through the air. Rushing, maybe not, because Oregon State's rush defense is actually quite good. The most amount of yards they've allowed in a game this season on the ground is 177, which is significantly below what Oregon averages and pretty much significantly below what Oregon State averages. But through the air, I think they can do some damage there. I wanted to just touch on that for a second. But key to the game, I'm going to agree with you guys, is obviously defense. It's just because this is with an injured Nix, with an injured offensive line, with a lot of uncertainty surrounding on the offense, the defense needs to step up like it does against Utah. I don't think I have to go too much into it because you guys, I think, have covered most of the angles that I would try to hit. But this is all about creating pressure on Gulbranson. If you create pressure on Gulbranson, and you figure out if you can get to the quarterback with rushing 4, rushing 5, whatever the case may be, he'll flounder. This is an opportunity for Oregon to really put some pressure on him, put him into uncomfortable and awkward situations, and try to get him to throw into some turnovers like they did against Cameron Rising.
I did mention earlier that if Oregon wins or if they lose, they could still get to the conference championship game. The tiebreakers right now, these are the 3 scenarios. Oregon wins over Oregon State or a loss by Washington State and they're in. So Oregon could lose and Washington State could win and the Ducks are in. So it's not as complicated as it would be, as I made it out to be, but there it is. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dive into some of our team and individual player predictions and then finish up with our score prediction.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Prediction time for this one. Offense first, offensive player, and then vice versa on the defense. I'll start with the offensive team pick here. I think Oregon's going to hit the season high in yards allowed for Oregon State's defense in Pac-12 play. The current number is 368, which came middle of the season against Washington State. The season high, by the way, is 492 in a win at Fresno State that was back and forth. I think Oregon State won that game on like a last minute, like a last play touchdown or something. Or it was a field goal. I think a healthy Bo Nix and, you know, week five of Oregon version of football could surpass 492, but I'm going maybe a little conservative here with Nix's injury. I think if they're healthy, that number gets beat. But I'm going 369 or more total yards by Oregon's offense, which would be a season high for Oregon State in Pac-12 play.
It's a pretty impressive number, by the way, for Oregon.
That's really good. I was not expecting it to be that low.
Yeah, and part of it, again, is I don't want to minimize it because they had the two tough games that they lost to USC and Utah. The rest of their schedule has been quite favorable, in part because the Washington game was played in such bad conditions where the offenses weren't really at a premium. Mine's sort of similar. I mentioned it earlier. I'm just skeptical and uncertain of what this rush offense is going to look like exactly. And so I think this is going to be a big Bo Nix passing the ball day. And I know I've been very complimentary of Oregon State secondary. I think there are some guys back there that are going to be all conference caliber players, probably players that have NFL futures. It's a very experienced veteran group. They added a transfer that has really kind of shored things up even more in Cooper. So like I have a lot of respect there, but I think Oregon is going to need to throw the football, and I think they're going to have some success. And I think some of the one-on-one battles, like Oregon, frankly, is just going to have a little bit better players in some of those situations. And I think they're going to have more success than just about anybody has had throwing the football this season against Oregon State. I have Oregon throwing for 300 or more yards, which I believe would be the second team to do that this year, third team, because both Fresno State and Washington State also surpassed that marker. I think Bo showed last week, and even talked about a little afterwards, is kind of interesting. You know, he's had two different ankle injuries that are kind of similar to this in his career, one in high school, one in college. Obviously, the one last year at Auburn forced him out. But he said, you know, he's had to at least one time in his playing career in high school transition from being that dual threat guy to being a pocket passer where you can't really move and you can't use your feet and your legs. And I think this week, as we saw last week, he's going to be kind of in that mode of 95 to 100% of what I'm doing is just standing in the pocket, you know, flicking the ball around, trying to get the ball to receivers. And even on a bum ankle, he was able to stretch the ball vertically, I think, way more than I expected last week. And I think that'll be more of the same in this game. So I go 300 yards or more through the air for an Oregon pass offense that I think really, really does need to be a focal point this week.
I had a similar one to Matt, but Matt, let me ask you, the conference record against Oregon State's defense is 398 from Washington. Do you still stick with it?
Did they go over 390? Is that what you're saying?
It was 398 Washington versus Oregon State this year.
Yeah, I'd stick with it. I think they're going to go just over 400 total yards offense, Oregon.
Nice. Yeah, I was looking at the total allowed. 492 was tempting, just because I know if Oregon's offense is rolling on all cylinders, I think they get there. They're not rolling on all cylinders just because of health issues and all that. But I do have them getting over 425. 425 was just an arbitrary number that sounded nice in my head. I went back and looked at the last couple of years that they've played. They put up 506 against Oregon State last season and then 468 against Oregon State in 2020. I don't think they'll hit either of those numbers, but I think something over 425 is more likely, just because we'll get to the individual player prediction, but I have something that'll give them a lot of yards in general. And I think that despite the rushing attack not really working against Utah, I think Utah's defensive front is better than Oregon State's defensive front. I really do. I know that the numbers don't indicate that, but Utah's played some pretty darn good rushing teams this season. And like Eric mentioned earlier and I mentioned earlier, Oregon State has played some of the bottom of the barrel Pac-12 offenses, rushing offenses. I think that they get some success on the ground. It's not going to be what their normal, like, you know, 230 plus yards on the ground, but I think they get some success to bring them over 425 yards.
Individual pick here. The last couple of weeks, Chris Hudson has had a terrific couple of games in the passing game. His involvement skyrocketed last week because of injury, I think. 9 catches, 56 yards. He had 7 catches for 55 yards against Washington, and then obviously against Colorado, 4 for 80. But the last 2 weeks, 16 total catches out of his 41. It's a lot. I think that continues for a third straight week and for a second straight week because of the Bo Nix injury. Look, there's not a lot of deep shots down the field, and Hudson's their best guy in the screen game. And so I'm going one or the other. 8 or more catches in this game for Chris Hudson, which I feel is very confident of happening. And then I split the averages 55 and 56, 55 and a half, but he'll go 56 or more yards in this game as well. So one of those two things happening, 8 catches, or I'll make it just an even 60 or 60 yards receiving for Chris Hudson. I think he's going to be heavily involved in the passing game.
I think that's a really good one, Matt, for kind of the reasons we outlined earlier this week, and you kind of did as well, where the screen game becomes part of the run game, basically. It becomes an extension of that. And how many times, even on that, I think he had like three of his catches on that opening drive last week against Utah. And it seemed like that was kind of a, hey, we maybe aren't going to be able to run the ball super effectively, but if we can get 6 to 7 yards and some short passes here, some screens, some hitches, then that'll be kind of a way to manufacture a little bit of that. So I think that's a really good one. I'm going the opposite kind of in terms of the sort of outcome of a play, which is Dante Thornton now has had, I believe, 4 catches the last 2 weeks go for more than 40 yards. I think it's just 3, but he's had 4 over 25 during that span. I think he's going to have another long catch. I think he's really coming into his own. I think notably it seems like Nix is really trusting him now. I don't know if that was something that was lacking early on in the season. I think a large part of his kind of reduced role had more to do with Chase Kota than anything wrong with Thornton, because Chase was such a reliable target, such a key player. Boat spoke so highly of how Chase kind of was, he and Chase kind of had a really good chemistry in terms of knowing where to be on the field in certain situations. It seems like there's a little bit of that chemistry developing down the field right now with Thornton and Nix, where that second pass in particular, Nix just kind of threw it to a spot and said, go get it, and trusted him in a really big spot. That was a tight football game, I think, when he threw that out there. And a really great play, a really nice adjustment made by Thornton to make that catch. I just think there's something brewing there. So I'm going Thornton has another 40 or longer catch this game, and I'm going to say it's going to be a touchdown. I just think he's playing at a really high level, and this is a really nice end-of-season sort of storyline here, where this is a player who can maybe, you know, we talked about it last year. We thought he was going to parlay a really strong kind of last couple of games, really just a strong bowl performance, into a really big sophomore season. Well, it took him a little longer than we expected. It took an injury, but I think we're maybe starting to see that, where we could go, hey, in 2023, there could be a great 1-2 punch with Franklin and Thornton, and 1-2-3 punch if you want to include Chris Hudson there too.
I like that one. Love me some Dante Thornton. Love me his skill set. But Eric, you went team offense, 300 plus yards passing. I'm going individual, Bo Nix, 300 yards plus passing, because think you overestimate Kenny Dillingham letting Ty Thompson throw down the field and not just behind the line of scrimmage.
To be clear, Jared, I guess by proxy, I was also individually predicting Bo Nix would throw for 300 yards because I don't predict anyone else will throw passes in this game.
Yeah, no Ty Thompson, no Jay Butterfield.
If they've learned anything from last week, it is just keep the ball with them. Give Ten has to have the football. Don't bring anyone else in. It gets complicated.
Keep it to him. I hope that they learned that last week. I got Nick Stone for over 300 yards. He came awfully close last week, 287 against Utah. I think that Oregon's going to have more possessions this week. I think that their passing attack is going to start early. And I do think that they'll use a screen game and really try to establish that as an extension of the run game. But I think they're going to take some deep shots down the field. I like the Dante Thornton prediction. I think Troy Franklin gets a little bit more involved this week than he was last week. And how about some tight end passes? Good gracious. They went from one of the best groups in the country to being absolutely nobody's the last couple of weeks. But maybe that's because they're sitting on the line blocking because they have to at this point with Nix not being able to run the football. But I got Nix throwing for over 300 yards.
I like that one. I think he's going to have a big day. And like last week, this could be a week where his glory, air quotes, at Oregon goes up. Defensive team pick. Oregon's gone 3 weeks without a sack. I don't know if you guys realize that. That's bad. Crazy to think about. Wild stat to hear. I was shocked when I think it was Mace Funa that brought it up. They've not been good. That's their money down, and they're not getting their money, as he said. I'm setting the over-under here at 1.5, and that feels like
yeah.
A terrible, easy number to hit. But when you look at the team, how they've played the last couple of weeks, when you factor in the game they're playing and the opponent doesn't throw the ball a lot, I'm going to take the over 1.5 sacks for Oregon in this football game. I think that streak ends, and I think that's going to be what gets to my game picks here in a little bit. But that's going to be one of the little things of this football game that you point to and say that had a really big impact.
Yeah, I was just pulling up stats to kind of look into it. Oregon State has only allowed 11 sacks this season, but it's come on 283 dropbacks. And if we think this is a game where Oregon has control and forces Gulbranson and Oregon State to try to throw the football, that's where maybe we see that number go up, because that ratio is very solid. I'm not saying it's not, but the number of pass attempts, like if they were throwing the football, say, on par with the rest of the conference, which is about 400 pass attempts, like they're legitimately like 100 passes attempted this season below a lot of teams in this conference. But if they threw it 100 more times, let's say, that number is now about 15, 16, which would put them kind of middle of the pack rather than being to the top. So I think that's a solid prediction. And Oregon really badly needs to get home. Mine is focused on an opposing individual player. I don't know if I've ever done this one exactly before, but I think Oregon holds Damian Martinez under 100 yards rushing. I think that's notable because Martinez has reached 100 in 5 straight games. He's been, I expect to win Pac-12 Offensive Freshman of the Year. I don't really think of anyone besides Jaden Ott who's really in the running for it. If there's someone in the comment, if I'm forgetting a really obvious one, let me know. There's no quarterback, and I don't know if there's even a receiver that's like really jumped out and had a great first year as a freshman. But I think Martinez has been such a crucial part. And if you go watch some of the games that they've played recently, he's going to be a really good player in this conference for a really long time. He is explosive. He is powerful. He's compactly built. He's 6 foot, about 220 pounds right now. I imagine that's a guy who by the time his final season at Oregon State is wrapping up, he's maybe closer to 230. But he runs with explosiveness. He's got great vision. He's got great balance. Like, he's a tough guy to bring down, but I think Oregon will be able to bottle him pretty well in this game, or at least better than in the last little run here. Because again, Oregon's run defense has been really solid this year. A stat I looked up and found was only UCLA's Zach Charbonnet and Washington's Wayne Talapapa are the only Pac-12 running backs to surpass their season averages in the games against Oregon this season. So Oregon has done a pretty good job with the exception of a couple of times here. Obviously, Charbonnet is just an incredible, incredible running back. I still think that's the best back they've faced all season, and probably that'll probably be the case at the end of the year, depending on what the postseason bowl game plays out to be. But there are not many more talented backs than Charbonnet in the country. I think Martinez is good. I don't think he's quite on that level, and I don't expect him to get over 100 yards in this game.
I like that. I have something very similar. I still think a running back is only as good as his offensive line, and Oregon's defensive line showed last week that, you know, Tavion Thomas ran for 180 yards against Stanford the week before and against a poor defensive front. Oregon's defense against the rush has been great all season long, but a lot of those stats you kind of make wonder. It's like, well, does the opposing team need to run? They just need to pass. That's all they have to do. But they've showed time and time again that they've been very good against the run. Even against against Utah, they hold Tavion Thomas to 56 or 65 yards. I don't remember off the top of my head. They held Utah to 52 yards underneath their season average that was going into that game. So I think they'll hold Oregon State to under or 50 yards under their season average today. So I have them holding Oregon State to under 150 yards on the ground, which I think would be a season low by the Oregon State offense. I really think that this rush defense for Oregon is damn good. I think the emergence of Casey Rogers last week, Brandon Dorlus, as we know, Keon Ware-Hudson is very good. Taki Taimani doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but he stuffs the line. He's very good. He got a pretty good PFF grade for run defense. I think that this defensive front needs to apply pressure, like Matt said, with the sacks earlier, but I think they'll be pretty solid along the front against the rush defense of Oregon State. So holding the Beavers to under 150 yards on the ground.
I'm going to pause our discussion here for a second. Do you think there's a possibility that, because we're all kind of talking a little bit about it, so I'm going to ask the question. I think there's a possibility that Oregon's defense could whip up on Oregon State, and this game maybe turns into what maybe we're all thinking is a 27-24 win. Could it maybe be a 27-10 win? Like, is that possible? Does Oregon's defense have that ability to do this?
Well, I think what Oregon should start to do is just to bear down on the rush. Say, hey, Ben Gulbranson, you haven't done anything this season. Try to beat us. Once he might start to beat Oregon, then they might lean off of rush defense, and then they could turn into a game where they're able to move the ball better. But I'm unsure if Gulbranson is capable of doing that. So I could see it being like a 27-10 victory. I just don't have enough faith to rely on Oregon's defense to say that they'll hold them to, under 14 points.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at, Matt. Is it a possible outcome? Yeah, probably. It's hard for me. And again, I think a lot of things on this particular topic, but a couple weeks ago, we were so down on this defense. It just feels weird for me to totally shift and say, now they're going to just shut down a rival in a game that's big.
Who has a good offense and just in general.
Who does have has a very good rush offense and has shown capable of throwing it through the air when they've needed to. Not at a high level. No one's going to say, even Oregon State fans and supporters would say, Ben Gulbranson is serviceable. He's not great. Cameron Rising is a better quarterback in Oregon. Really did a great job defensively in that game. And I guess the one area you can maybe talk yourself into saying Oregon's defense dominates this thing is if you go, hey, the Washington game may have just been a really bad matchup. Sure. It's just a really tough, it was a style of offense that Oregon is just not built to play right now with the speed that they lack on the back end. And they went against a Utah offense, which I think is fairly similar in a lot of ways to Oregon State, and did a really good job there. And that Utah offense has probably more talent at most positions than the Oregon State offense. And so you can say, hey, and maybe Oregon does it again this week, but I think if they held Oregon State to like one touchdown and a field goal, that would be surprising to me.
Very, yeah.
All right, just worth a discussion.
Agreed. I agree. I think what we all think here is Oregon has a chance to really dominate the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
Which would be maybe in line with a really low score for Oregon State, but I don't know. They just gave up 37 points a couple weeks ago and a bunch of long touchdowns. It's kind of hard to be like, yeah, these guys are incredible.
Sure. All right. Back to our regular schedule programming. team defense or individual defense. Sorry. Noah Sewell has had an interesting season. Dan Lanning has told us repeatedly that stats are for losers. But I'm going to go there. Sewell's stats are down considering the last couple of seasons. He has come on strong the last couple of weeks. Against Utah, he was phenomenal. Had 8 tackles. He had an interception. Was really good for Oregon. I think that continues this week. I think the matchup is perfect for him. And I think he hits double-digit numbers and tackles this season for the first time in this game. So that's 10 or more tackles. And I also think this game could potentially put him in a position to take over the team lead in tackles on the season. He's currently third. I really think there's a possibility we see Sewell have just a monster game. And the losers will go crazy because his stats are going to be pretty good in this one.
Yeah, us losers who like stats, we're going to have a really good no. I actually also did a Noah Sewell game. Our predictions are like very much in lockstep. I did the exact prediction I did last week, which I fell just short on, which is 9 tackles or more. His season high is currently 9, so I basically do matching it. Just a slight tangent since I don't have much more to say. Do we think the way the years play out, there's a chance Noah returns for a senior season?
I've been thinking that. I see Jared shaking his head, and I agree with him. But I think the question is worth pondering about, though.
I talked to somebody. I'm trying to think about how to position this. But I talked to somebody who's not like on the team or around the team, but who knows some people who says there's a lot of buzz right now that Noah's considering it. So just that's a thought.
I mean, it'd be smart. Because you can learn from Dan Lanning, who's obviously worked wonders with linebackers at Georgia. He needs a lot of help. He needs a lot of pass coverage help, which I guess they could help teach him. But I don't think so. I think he's still got a high enough, probably day 2 grade at this point, like a 2nd, 3rd, 4th round pick that he should probably end up, I think he'll end up going to the draft. Am I on to my individual pick?
It is your turn, yeah.
Okay, well, unfortunately, I also had a Noah Sewell one because, you go off last week and how well he performed. This is the same offense with an even worse quarterback that has to rely more on their rush offense. Ding, ding, and ding. Noah Sewell, again, over 7 tackles and over 1.5 tackles for loss.
I dig it. And look, none of us make –
we
don't
so.
Talk about what our picks are before we start doing this.
Well, so. Mine are published on duckterritory.com yes. under my Scopodamus, so you can find mine
there. I saw that we had the same ones.
I make it a point not to read yours before we go into these because that's cheating.
Fair enough. I appreciate the honor code there. Jared, come on. Don't
read cheat. I don't. Yeah.
Don't read my content, I guess.
that's a sub at Zach Neal. I'll just go read his predictions instead. Oh, Zach Neal, I hope you're listening.
I doubt
it. He's not listening. No, he's not listening.
All right. Score predictions here. And I'll be honest, I've gone back and forth. I still don't know as I'm talking what numbers I'm going to be throwing out here.
Live podcasting at its best.
I think Oregon wins. And I've got a sneaking suspicion that this game is going to maybe be one of those games where, hey, it's going to be close. Both teams are equal. And then the team on paper, who's far more talented, kind of flexes its muscle here a little bit. And the reason why I think that is Oregon's strengths play into Oregon State's strengths. This is good on good, essentially, what these teams are good at. Oregon State, I don't think, has the offense built to expose Oregon's terrible pass defense. And that's going to play into Oregon. So it's good on good. I like Oregon's individual talent better. I think Bo Nix is going to be a little bit more healthy They're going to have a little bit more time to game plan around what his injury and his limitations can be and can't be. And so I'm picking Oregon winning this game 34-21. I think it's going to be a 13-point win. I think Oregon gets a couple really opportunistic turnovers, whether that's a fumble or an interception or just a turnover on downs, or maybe an unofficial turnover, a missed field goal attempt by Oregon State. And they score, maybe they get that middle eight where they score right before the half and then they score right again early on in the second half. And that's the difference in this game. But 34-21 Oregon, they're going to have a pretty impressive performance for a team that's pretty banged up.
Earlier in the podcast, Matt, you said the exact score prediction I'm about to make. And I was wondering if we were going to have the same score again. So I'm happy you on the fly shifted. But I'm going really close, nail-biting game. That's fairly low scoring. I'm saying 27-24 Ducks. I don't know if I ever at this point thought Oregon would lose. I think if Nix's availability was really up in the air again, it would be tough, like it was last week when they played Utah and it was uncertain if he'd play. I just don't know if there's going to be enough offensive firepower really for either team to create enough separation to really pull away. And I could see the 27-24 being a close score that, and the game is close, but where Oregon still has kind of maintains control throughout and, you know, continues to hold kind of a one score lead throughout it. And, you know, one of the things I made earlier, just a couple of stats that are kind of interesting about kind of this rivalry is, you know, Oregon hasn't won a one-score game in Corvallis since 1994, which is pretty interesting. Like,
that's wow.
Yeah, so since 1994, when they won 17-13, Oregon has actually lost the majority of the games played in Corvallis, but the games that they have won, they've won 6 of 13. They've won by an average of 29 points. So it's like either they lose up there or they just completely whoop them. So I'm going kind of against the grain here and going, it's a really close game and Oregon wins by a field goal. We'll see though. Like there's also part of me that thinks the outcome could be a little bit more lopsided in Oregon's favor. But I just have a lot of respect. A lot of this stems from uncertainty at quarterback and then just a lot of respect for Jonathan Smith. I think he's an excellent coach and, to me, probably should win Pac-12 Coach of the Year. And I think if they do beat Oregon on Saturday, they probably move to the front runner. He probably moves to the front of that award list.
He'll absolutely be in contention. He's done a tremendous job with this program. That being said, I have Oregon winning 38-24. I think it's going to be a little closer than that final score indicates of a two-score touchdown win. But I think Oregon gets 7 points from something other than Bo Nix's right arm or anybody on the offensive side of the ball. So I think that's going to happen. A turnover, a punt return, whatever the case. I think special teams might actually do something this week. I agree with both of you where I can see this being a really close, like a three-score game, or three-point score game, not a three-score game, excuse me. But, you know, the last couple of years Oregon has played Oregon State, it kind of hasn't meant anything for Oregon. You know, 2020 was 2020. It's kind of a gross season. Last year, Oregon is already, you know, in the Pac-12 championship game. You know, they know that they're going to go against Utah. There's no one really breathing down their neck. They don't really need to get up for the game, and that's why some of these are a little more closer than expected. This is a win and you're in for Oregon. I think they're going to show up ready to go. I think Oregon State's going to show up ready to go. I think the first half is going to be very exciting, but I think where Oregon really begins to separate is that middle eight section again, where they've done so well but haven't done well in the last 2 weeks. I think that they jump out to a lead there. I don't think they let go for the rest of the game. So I got Oregon winning by 14.
Yeah, I agree with Jared. I think this is going to be an opportunity for Oregon to kind of flex his muscle here a little bit. But I'm excited to see it. I mean, look, these games are awesome when they're close and we don't get a lot of them. Eric's stat of the point differential is wild to me. Like, That's crazy to think about. It's going to be a fun environment. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. We're looking forward to getting down to Corvallis, seeing a football game in a construction zone. Bring your hard hats, guys. We don't know what's going to be falling from the sky. Hopefully it's clear, dry weather. It would be a shame if this game is impacted by weather. But next time you hear from us will be post-game. Don't yet know our plans for that. Normally we do it on our away games from the stadium, but we don't know if that's going to be feasible or not. So that podcast may come out a little delayed Saturday afternoon, but nonetheless, we'll get it up post-game edition. And until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.